Bird on the Hills with me, Felicity Sidnell Reed, my co-host Gwyn Scheldamer, and our guest this week, Bridget Campion. Most of your poetry is very personal, Bridget. So is your novel, My Cousin Julia, autobiographical to some degree?
Well, Felicity, I guess people would say that, you know, every poem, every story, every song, every painting, you know, all of these things are somehow autobiographical. But what I will tell you about My Cousin Julia is this. If you've ever seen Alfred Hitchcock movies, you know at the beginning of the movie, there's always a spot where Alfred Hitchcock makes an appearance. And in My Cousin Julia, if I were doing it as a movie, I would be making an appearance as one of the grade 10s. In the opening scene, rather than one of the grade 12s. And I would certainly be a school-spirited type, and I certainly would not have a cigarette, so.
Well, your central characters really come alive, and I found your evocation of student life and passions and interests in the 70s very convincing.
Thank you so much.
It was also illuminating, because I'd just gone back to teaching at that time, when my children were in school. And the Canadian teenage world was quite a mystery to me, very different from my school days in England. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about your central characters in the book. Mm-hmm.
Well, the first thing is, what I'd like to say is that if teenage life was a mystery to you in the 1970s, it was a mystery to most adults, and it was meant to be. Seriously, teenagers did not wish to have their world shared by adults.
No, indeed.
And of course, the other thing is, in the 1970s, I don't like to use this word, but we are certainly talking about the boom. This is still the boom. There were so many teenagers, so that this was an extremely important social force at that time. And I think that there were certainly some teenagers who were very aware of that, because we did talk about something called a generation gap, and it wasn't meant to be bridged.
Actually that's a characteristic of teenagers. Year we're living in,
they like
their private world.
I believe you're right. That's right. And so our central character is someone that I had to imagine. I mean, this is fiction, and fiction is about imagining and trying to understand a world that might not be your own, one that perhaps intersects with yours, but isn't necessarily your own. And what I was trying to do was to imagine what life would be like for people a couple of years older than I am and interested in different things than I was, and really trying to build a story around that. Or rather than saying build a story around that, certainly there would be some building involved, but also allowing the story to unfold, the story of two cousins who start off as very, very different.
When you wrote it, the first draft of this novel, you were 19.
Yes, I was. That was just a few years ago, as you know.
Yeah, of course. But let's look at it. You did put it in a drawer for however few years. Mm-hmm. And why did you keep it in the drawer so long? And I'm really interested in what major changes were that you made from writing it at 19, which is a very young age to write a novel about. Mm-hmm. Kids your own age, and 2013 when you published the book.
Well, My Cousin Julia really was the only novel that I saved from that period. Believe it or not, when I was in high school, I guess I must have had a great deal of energy. I probably wrote four novels. And
really?
Yes, and I threw the other three manuscripts away. And it's probably just as well. Okay, I'm not going to be a hoarder. But I was writing plays at that time and poetry. I was writing. Just writing. But for whatever reason, I decided to hang on to My Cousin Julia. It had something as far as I was concerned. And I tried to work at it a little bit, but it just wasn't the time to do it. In its initial form, it was probably about 50 pages long. You would call it a novella. That may be a bit longer than that. I would say that in its initial form, it was mostly about a character looking outwards and just observing what was going on around her and letting those stories unfold. And the major change would be in the central character herself becoming a real character in the book and setting up a more vivid juxtaposition between her and her cousin, and also between her and her social group, as she wrestles with more consciously the angst in her life.
In fact, she comments on her own observations.
Oh, yes.
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 In the final version.
Yes, she does. And you're quite right. She is an observer. But there is a point, two-thirds of the way through the book, that we finally learn her name. Mm-hmm. And this is a very significant point. She has a name. She has a persona. It comes together in this particular scene.
And wouldn't you say she finds her persona during the course of the novel? I mean, she...
Oh, yes.
It's very, very different at the beginning.
Absolutely.
I mean, there's a huge change in her
character. Huge change, absolutely. Yeah. Just as there's a huge change in her cousin.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, but you're quite right. In our central character, there is a huge change. Mm. And, of course, one of the big differences between the two versions is the ending.
Mm-hmm. You bracketed it with the present.
Yes,
yeah.
That's right. Putting those bookends in there, mm-hmm. as it were, just a little bit of a device. But yes, she is unfolding even as she is telling the stories of others. I think you're quite right about that, Felicity.
Mm. Well, how about reading us some of this book?
Okay. Well, so what I'm going to read to you, and this is certainly one of the scenes where we see a bit of transformation taking place. We have our heroine writing her grade 12 English exam. And again, this is back in 1970. It would be the January exam. Inside the gymnasium, I left my purse in the pile at the back. I made sure that I had two pens and my student card as I walked with my friends to the section where the grade 12 English exam was being written. "I hope they don't ask too much about that plague book," said Monica. The way Joe and Wayne nodded, I knew that they hadn't finished the book either. I coughed. "I think there should be some choices in the exam," I said. Ange looked at me, surprised, but no one else paid any attention. In fact, I knew there would be choices. I'd read the study guide. My friends and I took our seats in the outside row. High above us, the gym windows were open, letting frosty air into the stuffy room. Teachers patrolled the aisles slowly, making sure that our student cards were in the top right corner of our desks and that no one laid a finger on the exam sheets waiting to be turned over. At the front of the gym, watching the clock, was Miss Prescott. It was 5 minutes to the hour. "Mr. Russell, would you close the gymnasium doors, please?" No one could resist Spinster's commanding voice. The geography teacher shut the door. Spinster's voice continued to ring out as she explained the rules, that everyone was to stay in the exam for at least half an hour, and that no one could leave during the final 15 minutes. If we needed more paper, we were to put up our hands. If we needed to go to the bathroom, we were to put up our hands. The gym door creaked open, and Susie and Larry slunk in. Susie's purse hit the floor with a clunk. Spinster glared at them and directed them to our section. As the long list of rules resumed, Joe, who was in the desk behind me, leaned forward. "What do we do if there's an atom bomb?" Ange, in the desk in front of me, answered over his shoulder. "Put up your hand," he said. This broke us up, and Spinster fixed us with a frozen stare. We stopped laughing. The gym door creaked again, and Julia crept in. Her face was beet red, and her hair was greasy. She looked as if she hadn't slept or washed for days. While Mr. Russell called her back to put her purse with the rest of them, I scanned our section. When I hadn't seen her in the hallway earlier, I'd assumed that she was sick. No one had saved her a seat, and she fumbled her way to the very front of the row, not looking at any of us. I had to hand it to her. She was doing a great job of shedding her image as a brain. 1 minute to go, breathed Monica. I could hear the worry in her voice. Normally at this time, in the minute before the exam began, I'd be filled with regret that I hadn't used my time more wisely, that every year it was the same thing, and that I had only myself to blame. But in the minute before my grade 12 English exam, my chest was filled with something else, curiosity. There was no other word for it. I'd organized, memorized, I'd studied. Like the experiment it was, I wanted to see if it would make any difference at all. "Students," Miss Prescott commanded, "begin your exams." In a single motion, 500 papers were turned over. The exams had begun. As it turned out, my grade 12 English exam was filled with many strange new experiences. For one thing, I was calm as I read through the list of questions and as I chose three to answer. I made some notes on the inside of the examination booklet and then set to work. I just kept writing. It was incredible. But as I got to the end of my answer to the second question, I realized that I had no more paper. I'd filled an entire exam booklet. The first thing I did was panic. I still had another question to do. Then I remembered. I put up my hand. "Do you want a bathroom pass?" Miss Lewis asked. No, I whispered. "I'd like another booklet." She blinked, but handed me the paper. Then, as I finished the third question, shaking my hand to get the cramping out, I glanced at the clock and looked again. A full hour remained in the exam. Knowing it couldn't possibly be right, I snuck a glance at the clock on the other side of the gym. An hour and 5 minutes remained in the exam. And I was done. Had I missed something? In front of me, Ange closed his booklet, collected his pen and student card, and got up. Normally, I'd have my head down as I desperately tried to squeeze answers from my brain, anything to fill up the blank space. But I felt so light. I looked at him, and he raised his eyebrows. I cocked my head, then heard him kick Joe on the way out. I went over my answers just to be sure, and then 5 minutes later did something I'd never done before. With either 55 or 60 minutes still to go, I walked down the aisle, handed my exam to Miss Lewis, got my purse, and left the gym.
A triumph.
A triumph indeed.
Well, thank you very, very much for coming in and reading to us, Bridget.
Well, thank you so much for giving me the opportunity. I've really enjoyed this. Thank you.
Good. I know you're going to make your books available at local bookstores, is that not correct?
Yes, I was talking to Wendy at the Avid Reader this morning, and she said, bring them over, and so I will, probably on my way home from here.
Good, good. To connect with us, if you are listening, please send comments, queries, or suggestions for whom we might interview in future programs to wordonthehills@gmail.com. And thanks for tuning in. We hope you'll join us for another program next week.